That's the new experiment, is can you cook chicken with one slap with enough kinetic energy in it?
No, the answer is
there's no possible. You destroy it.
I can do it. Welcome back to the Forecast, a bi-weekly podcast about everything games, film, and news. I'm Aaron Juno.
I'm Alex McCausland.
I'm Ben Diaz.
I'm Caleb Juno.
I'm Chad wearing joggers McCausland.
And I'm Jake Fetter Kyle.
On today's episode number 213, Balatro wins again, this time amongst developers. The Oscars happens. I don't know why I wrote that, but I did. And the future game show happened, but none of us watched it. Plus, Split Fiction is absolutely dominating the GOTY list so far. Recombobulate is not a word. And Ben beat the Elden Ring DLC again for the second time.
Oh, yeah.
Just dominating. If you'd like to know more about what we do, you can follow us on our social channels. You can check out our website at wearethehorizon.com. I can't speak today, where we have a ton of original content for you to browse through, including our new Pathfinder 2E campaign that's almost a year old now, Crown of Conquest. Additionally, everything we talk about is pushed out to our cast notes, which is pushed out to whatever podcasting app you are using. Let's get into it. Chad, do you have a community conversation primer for us this week?
I do.
I'm listening.
So this is kind of in the same vein of, you know, Split Fiction coming out, and, you know, the, what is it, the hypotheticals of, you know, going into a different world. Also, like, just, I don't know, experiencing that type of game for the first time, and, like, with a partner is, like, really fun. There's really, really special moments, so... I guess whoever sent this question, and, you know, just really wanted to know what gaming moment do you wish that you could experience again for the first time?
Ooh, that's a deep question.
Probably playing Kingdoms of Amalur for the first time again.
I hate you.
Wait, is this like? Because I know you referenced Split Fiction at the beginning. Is this a gaming moment you had with friends, or a gaming, just any gaming moment you've ever experienced in your life?
Just any in your life.
Okay. Boy.
Meeting Andrew Ryan in BioShock.
Oh, dude.
That's a good answer.
I mean, hands, that's my favorite game because of mostly that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a really good freaking moment.
Oh, that's a good one. Gaming, best moment. That's so tough.
I mean, I think I gotta say the ending of Doki Doki Literature Club.
Yeah, that one too.
Getting to experience that one totally blind again.
That's really sick. Up there.
Was it moment or experience?
Either.
Yeah. I'm gonna take this a different direction, in that some of the fondest memories of, like, early gaming for me was, like, old school getting on and playing RuneScape with people for the the really early intro. You get on, you're talking with people, and, like, you're trading stuff. It was a big deal for me at the time, and it was a really fun game, and it was really interesting. It was just so wildly different from anything I'd done before, and that might be my pick, legitimately.
Man, this is tough. I think for me, it was playing... how do I describe this? We built a stage and we played Guitar Hero with a group of four people in front of 30 people inside of my house when I was in college, and people rotated out during songs, and it was like an actual concert. It was just an incredible experience.
Aaron,
that sounds sick.
I need to get you to come up for MAGFest sometime, because they bring a copy of Rock Band and project it on the wall in one of the like main event rooms, and just people cycle through. It's great.
Yeah, dude, this setup was nuts. We had we literally borrowed a stage, and then we set up a TV on the ground as a monitor, and then we had a projector projecting at a white sheet on the wall behind us while all four of us are playing instruments. It was an incredible experience. Alex? Thinking real hard over there.
I think I'm going to... You guys are going to be like, oh, this is an Alex answer, but... That one game of Dota where I was playing anti-mage.
How did I know? And
you were farming freaking, for like 50 minutes.
We
in
got
the jungle.
Down to one barracks, just one half, and we defended it for like an hour straight and then came back and won that game. And that was like the best feeling. The best feeling ever when that we won that game after that long.
That was a good game.
And I was the carry, and yeah. I was just eviscerating people at the end. Oh man,
he's getting chills thinking about it right now.
That or like a really good Meepo game, but that one's is the specific moment that sticks out.
Wow,
that's pretty good. Man, good question, deep question so, this week.
I didn't respond, but you know, I'll say mine's pretty quick. It's a specific location we were at. I think it was called Game On, and it's a place where you go in and you spend like $5 to basically pull a game off the shelf and play it on one of the TVs in the back. And Alex and I were playing Gears of War for the first time, and we got to the Berserker part, and that was the most terrifying, like adrenaline pumping, like awesome moment. And then I go back now and I play that section and I'm like, okay, it wasn't that great. But like, man, when I was younger and that thing was chasing you and you're just like, holy crap, like we're going to die. It was great. Fantastic.
Man. Good question. Thanks for that, Chad. All right. I want to move to a couple things news related. One, first and foremost, I always find it interesting. We talk about Game of the Year, because we do our own Game of the Year out list, obviously. We follow a bunch of people who do Game of the Year lists. We read all kinds of articles about who thinks what the best Game of the Year list is. And it's always interesting to compare that to what the developers think. Because a lot of times it's just, you know, people who are playing and what their opinion is. The Game Developers Choice Awards happened, I think, just yesterday or the day before. And I wanted to bring this up because I think it's interesting. They voted Balatro as Game of the Year. Number okay. one. Number one, along with, they voted it for also Best Debut and the Innovation Award and the Best Design. Four awards went to Balatro for 2024's video games. Guys, I think it should have been higher on our list, clearly.
Nah.
Man. Nah. They did also pick Best Visual Art for Black Myth Wukong. Best Audio was Astrobot. Best Narrative for Metaphor ReFantazio. Social Impact Award was Life is Strange Double Exposure. The Best Tech was Astrobot. The Audience Award went to Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. But still, again, Balatro had four awards out of that, out of like 10.
I mean, that was good.
But not that good?
I just think it's like, for people that often play deck builders and roguelites, it's kind of uninspired, but like it's
uninspired.
It's like set in a way to get normies to be like, oh yeah, I know poker. And then they're like, oh, there's so many twists on this. That's so cool. And then, you know, people are like, this is crazy. How do they do this in a video game? And meanwhile, we've been doing stuff very similar for, you know, a decade plus with like more depth to it.
Sure. I don't know. The Balatro is a weird choice. I think compared to their last choices, Baldur's Gate 3, Elden Ring, I guess Inscription 2021 was their game of the year. That's another kind of strange.
Obviously, it should have been Astrobot.
Yeah, Astrobot. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Astrobot got tech, huh? What is yep. the what's the tech award supposed to mean?
Doesn't say.
Technically, yeah, it got an award.
What is that supposed to mean?
Best technology.
There's no way.
Best technology.
Best technology. But
there's no way it's Astrobot.
Is that just because you can flip the little bots off of your controller? It's like, whoop, whoop.
It's because it uses all the features of the six axis is probably it.
And then, yeah, when you're flying in, you're like, you know.
Adaptive Best triggers.
Technology. Best Technology Award recognizes the overall excellence of technology in a game, including graphics, programming, artificial intelligence, networking, and physics.
Ah, AI. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That makes sense.
If you're going based off that, doesn't make sense.
Past winners include Tears of the Kingdom, God of War Ragnarok, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, Microsoft Flight Simulator, Control, Red Dead Redemption 2, Horizon Zero Dawn.
That's a weird category. I don't like
They just randomly pick games for that
they
one,
do.
Huh?
They sure do.
They just be doing whatever.
Like, I kind of like this game, but like, I don't really want to put it in any other category. So this one.
I think... Hilarious. Technically... I think Hellblade 2 is the most impressive game last year.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I would pick as well.
Most technically impressive game?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I could take that. Okay, one more thing in news realm. Alex, I don't even know how to intro this, but I'm just going to read it. Video game decompilation and recompilation and recombobulation, okay, which is not a word.
The last part got added by not me.
Allegedly, it's in your color.
Yeah, but whose cursor is that? That's Aaron's cursor at the end of it.
My cursor's not at the end of it.
It is. Oh, now it's not.
What are you talking about? There ain't no cursor.
Gosh. We have a frozen Jake now, by the way.
Yeah, that's what everyone
that's
keeps telling me.
That's a very funny picture.
Okay.
I'm telling you, it has been. I haven't had it open in a browser this whole time. I don't know how it was working ever.
There's a browser somewhere. Certainly
there's not.
A browser.
Hey, you didn't turn off the camera from last stream.
Yeah.
It's just been on this for 2 weeks.
Okay, so this is an interesting story that happened recently. I got turned onto this by Digital Foundry. They posted a video about the recompilation project for Sonic Unleashed, which is a like Xbox 360 game. It was only ever on Xbox 360, but a team basically took the code and recompiled it and ported it to like C, and now it runs natively on a PC. And you can do additional stuff with that, like they have like additional graphics menus that they've added to the game and stuff like that, so you can tweak like resolution and like stuff like you would do on a regular PC title. Super, super cool. It was a 30 frames per second game on Xbox 360, and now it runs at like, you know, 200 plus frames perfectly, no problem, on a PC with like cool new graphical features. And it's not emulated at all. It's just natively running in Windows.
Is it like a good game?
I don't know. People that like Sonic think that's they like that one for some reason.
Wait, what's its name again? I want to look at
its
rating.
Caleb, are you asking if the game is Unleashed. Good or if it's running well?
Unleashed.
If
is
the game itself is good.
Sonic
like, was
Unleashed.
It worth the port?
It's no Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, but
oh my gosh.
It's pretty solid.
On what is?
True, true.
Should I see what Games Radar ranks it as?
Oh, yeah, if there's anyone I trust now, it's Games
Radar. Is it the 30th most popular soundtrack of all time?
Wow. 3 out of 5 stars. Half a great game and half a near total disaster.
Wow. It was odd choice, I think, that one was one that people worked on. But it got me interested in other games that people have been working on for this. So it's apparently like a kind of recent movement to try to recompile or decompile some of these old games. So like a bunch of the Jack series from PlayStation 2 has been done.
Oh.
Crash Bandicoot is playable, being worked on. At one point there was a team doing it for PT from the PS4.
Oh, finally. Yeah.
but they got shut down by DMCA. PT, famously the game that got pulled and nobody can play it anymore because they decided they didn't want to make the full game anymore or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Is that a Kojima or
Konami game? Fired Kojima.
Yeah. I think Ocarina of Time and like Mario 64 and like a bunch of kind of old Nintendo stuff is the most popular efforts being put into this right now. But I just thought it was really cool. So like traditional emulation to get stuff running on a PC, you use software to emulate the hardware and then like the actual game's untouched.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have decompilation and recompilation. There's two different things. So decompilation, basically they view the compiled code as assembly language, and then they go through it painstakingly and read and understand what each part of it does.
No freaking way.
And then they write code in C that will compile to the same result.
That is disgusting.
And then they can take that, which results in like human readable code that's split into like logical files, and the functions and data is all named like appropriately so they can actually utilize it. They can then take that stuff and port it. That seems crazy to me. Recompilation is a very recent thing and is what has been happening to like this Sonic game. They basically skip the requirement for human readability and reproducing it by hand, and they just have a system that reads the code instruction by instruction and then outputs code in another language that reproduces what the instructions do.
Oh.
And that new code can be ported. So that stuff, you'll be able to do less custom stuff with. Like decompilation projects, they're like with Mario 64 and stuff like that, there's a bunch of projects where they like, they've added co-op to it, or like they've taken Mario and all of his abilities from Mario 64 and put them in like other games and stuff. But recompilation is just like a faster way that you could go through and get ports of old games that are locked to systems just ported to PC natively.
That's what
super cool effort.
The assembly, like reading the output from assembly and then converting it by hand over to something that's human. That is crazy, dude.
That's an undertaking for any game, even a tiny game.
Teeny tiny. That's nuts. But that's really cool. I mean, hey, passion project. That's how really cool things exist, from people having passions about something they want to build. That's really neat. Now, what is recombobulation in this context as well?
That's something Aaron wrote in my notes.
I did not write it. I don't know who wrote that, but I'm getting blamed for it, and I don't like it.
I didn't do it.
Okay, moving on to film. We want to talk about Mickey 17, which is a movie, that Alex, Caleb, and Chad and I went and watched. Alex, you want to intro this?
Yeah.
Can we talk about this?
I just thought we didn't have a ton of notes, and also it's the first movie we went and saw in theaters in like forever, so
since Dune 2,
maybe twice. Worth mentioning. It is
you only say it twice?
Yeah, you saw it three times, right?
I was about to say, I think I went three times, maybe.
I think you went once by yourself.
Maybe, I don't know.
This is the latest film from Bong Joon-ho, director and screenplay of Parasite and like Snowpiercer and some other stuff. Those are the two that I know off the top of my head. It's basically a story about human cloning in some ways. They can basically 3D print people, and they decide that that is bad on Earth, but out in space where it's like the rules are more relaxed, they're like, we're going to use printed people for really dangerous jobs where they can just go die and then get reprinted again. And Mickey 17 is the 17th iteration of the main character. Pretty cool premise, I think.
Yeah, I've been wanting to see this.
It's Robert Pattinson, for what's worth, the main character.
I think it's a really interesting take on the complications and the variations, I guess you could say, of if you were to go through some sort of like cloning process in a movie. If somebody wants to present that in a way, most of the time it really feel like it's just, here's another exact replica, exact version of the thing you've seen before. And this story has a different take on it, and I really liked the way it went, or the sort of approach they took. A lot of this story is, if you've seen Don't Look Up, it gave me Don't Look Up vibes big time. Mark Hamill's character, not Mark Hamill's character, my goodness.
Mark Ruffalo.
Wow. Thank you.
I did that in my head earlier, so yeah. I know the issue.
Gosh, yeah, his character in this movie is hilarious, and I'm pretty sure he has the largest set of denture teeth in like an insert in his mouth, because he cannot even close his lips. He has so much teeth going on in there.
It's great.
Yeah. I also feel like this is kind of a return from Parasite. Felt, even though it was kind of a wild story, it felt very not like, it didn't feel fantastical. It just kind of felt like this could actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
This went back to just kind of like the Snowpiercer realm of some wild, crazy idea and how you would present that on film. And I think it delivered. It was a really fun movie to watch.
Even like stylistically and like the technology and seeing stuff feels a lot like that movie, like Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah.
Good movie.
Well, the visuals and stuff like that. I did think it was, upon reflection, I do think it's like a bit weaker than maybe those other two.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. Yeah.
Unless you're a culinary expert and you really like sauces, this movie is for you. Let me tell you. You can always get a good sauce from anything,
it's,
really.
It's quite funny, though, which is I was not expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know if he's directed a very comedic movie before. Well, not a lot.
And I love Robert Pattinson at this point, so.
Yep. It's excellent.
He's great.
Well, go give it a watch. Good movie. Mickey 17, Bong Joon-ho. It's a lot of fun. You know what it's time for?
Oh my god, are we already that far?
We're already there.
Oh my god. This podcast was a mistake.
Well, when you spend 20 minutes trying to figure out audio issues.
Good times.
Gosh. Well, Bipple. Boys.
Whoop
Bipple. A whole bunch of us have been playing Split Fiction. Let's talk about this game that
Hell yeah.
I have a feeling going to show up in our Game of the Year lists.
Yeah, number 25.
Number 25.
It is going to be in mine.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I don't want to refund this game, by the way, guys. It's okay.
Yeah.
Great, because we're all playing your chat.
Wait, I'm really interested in this. Does it, like, it doesn't show you total hours played for that game on your account, right? It just still shows what you've played.
Pretty sure.
Would be pretty funny.
Man, I've only played 4.7, and I think that's just me and Kate.
Yeah. All right.
Because, yeah. Wow, it doesn't even actually show, if I hover over you guys, it doesn't show any hours.
Heck yeah, I haven't played that game. This is Hazelight Studios' new game. You remember the developer of this game, the main guy, is one of the most animated people on stage ever. Most things he's made have been really good. The last two games are very standout, though, and I think this one takes it to the next level. There's some really interesting aspects of this game that I really liked. Alex and I have only played like a couple hours. I don't know how much you guys have actually played a Split Fiction.
I've played probably like 3 or 4 hours.
Okay.
I think Jake and I are like an hour and a half or something.
Yeah, okay. 100 minutes.
I might be furthest right 2 hours. Now, other than, I don't know if Chad's gotten a lot further.
I don't really know how to describe where in the story, because it's pretty much spoilers if you say something.
I mean, I was gonna ask if you guys had gotten to a particular, like,
don't do it,
boss, but
don't do it.
I feel like he's played the least. No, wait, you guys said 100 minutes.
Yeah, they've definitely played the least.
I think the last thing we did was Hammer Time.
Oh yeah.
I think that's the last.
For reference, I'm at 7 hours, actually. I was wrong.
Okay. Ooh, okay. Crazy.
Wow.
Jeez.
Played a bit more.
Man, this game gets off to a rocket start. It is so fast-paced.
It does go really fast.
It kind of doesn't stop.
Yep.
I had a feeling that would be the case.
That was like the one thing I said when Aaron and I finished two hours. Great. I was like, there's so many huge set pieces that have already happened.
Oh yeah, it it just keeps introducing new stuff and new stuff and new stuff. So like it never gets old. But what, like, in a good way. It doesn't overwhelm you with like too much stuff, because it keeps, like, it's not just adding things, it's swapping things.
Yeah.
It's gonna be like, hard to beat that pig level though.
Pig level is a good level. Maybe not best level.
What I really like about level. What I really like about this is I feel like, from Hazelight's perspective, they took the concept of It Takes Two, which was an incredibly well-executed game, and they put it in a story where they could kind of go any direction they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes this game mechanic execute so effectively.
Well, it can go two directions.
But that covers so much of, like, just nonfiction.
Yeah. I feel like it covers, like, 50% of nonfiction.
Sci-fi and fantasy, it's, like, most of it.
Well, it's also, like, so cool to see the interactions between the two characters, because one is the fantasy mind and one is the sci-fi mind, and the sci-fi mind's like, yeah, action! And the fantasy mind's like, whimsical, like, it's just, it's cool. It's cool to see.
It's been very funny, because I've been playing through it with Liz, and, It's been very funny going through, because we definitely almost immediately self-identified with one of the two characters, uh-huh. and they were opposite characters, yeah. which is mostly funny, because we accidentally picked playing the character that was opposite. Like, I'm playing the fantasy character, but I'm like, man, I get the sci-fi character. There's literally a bit where something, like, insane happens, and we're sitting there on the couch, and Liz goes like, oh my god, and I just went, that's fucking awesome. And then it comes to the characters in-game, and the fantasy girl goes, what was that? And then the sci-fi character goes, it was awesome is what it was.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, good. Yeah.
Similar thing happened to Kate and I. She chose sci-fi chick, and I, you know, was forced over to. So, and it's so funny how their attitudes and just their personalities are just the opposite of what Kate and I are.
Yeah. It's like,
I should be playing the other character, but it's like, it's so cool because now I'm like playing Caitlin while Caitlin's playing me, kind of thing.
I will say also, from a perspective of, I played It Takes Two with Liz also, and I can tell she's much more into this one. It feels like, I'm not sure if they tweaked the respawn locations or changed difficulty or something. An issue we ran into a lot with It Takes Two was, like, we'd get frustrated if we were, like, failing a puzzle or something over and over again. Just because she's a little bit less practiced than I am at certain games, so it's a little mechanically harder to do jumping puzzles and stuff. She's not really having the same issues with this game. Like, there's definitely some puzzles where it takes her a few tries, but I'm not sure if it's they're easier or, like, you respawn right before when, like, something happens, but we've had no similar problems with this one.
Are you guys by chance keeping track of how many times you and your partner have died? Because I have an app.
Oh,
I'm keeping track of how many times Alex and I have died.
That's a lot. That's a lot of deaths.
That's a lot.
I was actually looking at that. I was like, that's not that many.
A couple of my deaths were because I looked over to press the button to give Alex another death. Unfortunately,
we have regularly just been like, I don't know. I wonder what happens if I jump off this. And it's like, oh, we died. Shock.
Yeah.
One thing I really like about this game, there's a lot of references. I mean, like, every 5 seconds, I feel like it's a reference to something in pop culture or another video game or whatever. There's also a lot of, like, really fun comedy. And the way that they are progressing the story, everything is just, they just know what's going on. It's never a thought. It's never a, maybe this could be what's happening. It's always
the,
like,
characters, yeah.
I know what this is. I know what's happening. I know how to solve the problem.
The characters, like, leap to conclusions.
Dude.
And they're just like, that's the answer. We gotta get to all these glitches, and that'll stop it.
It looks
like that memory
game.
Went away. Oh, do you think that saved it from the bad people? Yup. That's what happened.
That's exactly what happened.
We better keep doing that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of things I want to say about this game, but I don't want to give away spoilers at this point. So I kind of want to have, like, I want to re-talk about this game again next cast.
This game, by the way, currently overwhelmingly positive on Steam. And I did see, I think late last week, that they'd already hit 2 million copies sold.
Nice.
Bro, this is
that means 4 million people playing.
And somebody said they did that thing again where you only need one copy to play with two people, right?
Yeah,
yeah, in fact.
Or in our case, one copy to play with eight people.
Don't let Steam know.
Yeah, stop saying it out loud.
Yeah, all of us brothers and family members that live in the same house.
We live together. We live in the Horizon house. That's what I'm all about.
We just cast from different bedrooms.
Yes. Hey, we've got six brothers on this cast.
Correct. That is true.
Nothing wrong with that.
Correct. This says Split Fiction hit 2 million copies sold in just 1 week. Its predecessor sold 23 million copies over its over the calendar year and one game of the year that year.
I think I read that it hit 1 million in the first 2 days.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I just want to call out that this is like a modern release that just got announced and then like a few months later got released and runs perfectly. And yeah. And it's like split screen, which is even harder to do because they're rendering two perspectives at once. And it runs at native resolution. Like, you don't need, like, DLSS or anything. And it just runs maxed out for my monitor's refresh rate.
It runs so well.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Solid W.
I will say, streaming it from my PC through Steam down to a laptop doesn't run the best. So just playing it on a laptop, it actually does run pretty good.
I've been doing the same thing. I've been streaming down. That being said, I've been using Moonlight instead. But
I feel like it would probably be better on Moonlight.
Yeah, I've been, granted, I'm running it at like 1080p, but it's been great. We've been just using it as couch play with two controllers.
You don't even need to do that. Just buy a 100-foot Thunderbolt cable and run it from your PC to your main floor and plug it into your TV and then also all your peripherals. And then you just play your TV. Here's you just have a cord laying on your ground.
I play couch co-op games in two different rooms of my house, depending on what we're doing.
100-foot
Thunderbolts. Very cheap. Feel like I just finished closing up the last hole in my wall from when I ran wiring 2.5 years ago. Like, I just closed up the last one last week.
Big yike.
So, before we get off Split Fiction, I wanted to bring up the developer's response to something. So, of course, with modern gaming, there's always going to be those people who like to be toxic, and they look at this game and they're like, oh, two female leads. What is this wokeism? God. And he responds, listen, guys, what do you mean wokeism? I'm basing both of these characters off my daughters. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't, like, this is off my daughters. Like, come on, guys. Like, what are you doing?
I didn't know it was based off his daughters. That's cool.
That is cool.
Hey, he's a cool guy. He's wild.
I wonder how much it's actually like one likes fantasy more and one likes sci-fi more.
Their personalities coming through.
Listen, we got to the pig level, okay? And I was like, one of the daughters had a hand in crafting this. Like, for sure, he took it out of their journal. Like,
man, the other thing, we didn't talk about this, but the other thing, the big difference between It Takes Two and this is there's a lot more weight to the story in It Takes Two. It feels a lot less like played as a kid, and there's a lot more really important life choices and things you have to deal with. This one feels way more like fun and just like exciting things that are going on in the story versus you trying to work out your differences with the person you're in co-op with. I think it's a really fun change.
It Takes Two was a story based on like trying to re-find love within a divorce, right?
Refine the love.
While Split Fiction is, from what I've seen so far, two strangers becoming friends.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah. It gets a bit more serious later on, but not nearly as much as It Takes
He's
Two.
Spoiling it. He's spoiling
it's not
it.
A spoiler.
Pick him off the cast.
Jeez, remember the opening scene? There's like an opening scene with the two characters, and one of them's like, I hate sci-fi. And the other one's like, I don't like fantasy at all. And I went to Aaron, I was like, cue the end of the game. We're like, maybe I'll check out some sci-fi sometime. And maybe I'll read a little fiction. And I was like, yeah, that's going to happen.
Yep, for sure.
For sure.
No, but you're, it is way lighter than.
What's funny is nice. Like, presentation wise, they're opposite.
Yeah.
This one's way more violent. There's like blood and stuff.
There is blood, which was surprising to me.
Yeah,
man, pig level.
Cut off a guy's arm at one point.
Yeah,
the heck?
It's just like whoa.
It Takes Two is like dolls running around in a kid's bedroom.
To be fair, there's a pretty violent part.
Okay, there is actually one part in that game.
Yeah, dude, it'll mess you up.
It's referenced in Split Fiction.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Has everybody here? I don't remember how far in the game it gets. Has everybody here
spoiling it already? It's already queuing up to spoil it.
Never mind. We should shut up. God, I want to talk about this game more.
All right, play before Ben ruins anything. Caleb, what have you been playing lately?
I mean, other than Split Fiction, I've been playing. I got back into Cobalt Core. I didn't put this on my list, but I got back into Cobalt Core.
I'll have to talk about it.
Just trying to finish off the final achievements for it that I had waiting around. That game is great. It's like a little roguelike where you play as just, it's like FTL, but you play as only the ship and not the people on the ship, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it's just got really, really fun gameplay. Quite a few ships and crew members you can choose from that change your deck, or your deck building aspects. It's great. Otherwise, I've been playing The Rise of the Golden Idol dropped its new DLC, Sins of New... I can't remember the name. No.
Sins of New York. You got it.
I've only played...
Sins of a New Solar Empire.
Yes.
I've only played like two scenarios in it, but it's pretty good so far. I mean... I think their DLC in the past has been great, so
very good.
I'm sure the rest of it will be good as well. But you play as one of the detectives from the base game, doing some of their various cases in the past. And it's fun. The game's just great. Really good puzzle, deductive reasoning game.
Nice. Jake?
Yeah, so other than Split Fiction, I also started playing Tyranny. This is sort of an older CRPG by Oblivion. I've been playing a bunch of Avowed, and I asked Caleb, I was like, Caleb, I'm feeling like I want to do more RPG stuff. What's like a good one? He was like, Tyranny or that Warhammer game. Yeah, and I was like, all right, let's hang on. I don't know if I'm ready for Warhammer just yet. So I started playing Tyranny, and that game is really, really fun. The issue I always have with CRPGs is I feel like CRPGs tend to just throw a lot of writing at you. Like, you start it and you just start reading all of these, like, proper nouns. It just gets very overwhelming very fast. And Tyranny has a little bit of that, but it definitely helps that, like, the big things you need to worry about are, like, this one... There's basically two factions, and one is super crazy and one is super organized. It's like, okay, I can keep that in my head.
Yep.
I can keep them different, and they're color-coded. One is blue, and one is red. Got it. Red guys are crazy. Blue guys... Not even, because you're all bad guys.
They're
That's
all
the
bad
thing I'm really liking about Tyranny.
They're all bad
you
guys.
Just, you play the villain, and the game's just like, hey, you're the bad guy. Like, listen, you're the bad guy. Like, don't even worry about it. Like, literally, there was a part... I finished, like, the first chapter. It was really short. This first, like... It's almost like a tutorial section. And I end up, like, at the top of this tower, and one of the guys is like, oh, man, we gotta tell our friends at the bottom that we made it all the way up here. And so I took one of our prisoners, handed him a note, and I pushed him off the tower. And I was like, all right, they know now. Good job, everyone, we did it.
That's good.
You
should definitely play Rogue Trader after this. This could be a lot in common there.
The cool thing about that game is all the proper nouns have dictionary definitions.
Correct. True, you just mouse over them. And there's dictionary definitions in the definitions for other proper nouns. It's crazy.
You don't read those. You just ask Abelard to restate everything.
Yeah. Abelard, can you explain the plot to me, please?
Man, two of the things I really like about Tyranny, like two of my favorite things about the game. At the very beginning, there's like a background generation piece where you pick all the choices that your character made
in the past
before the game. And a lot of them have, like, real impacts in-game that are quite important. And I think it's so cool. It's just, it's one of the best I've seen of, like, a background for a character.
It's very nice. The nice thing about a CRPG, right, because it's so text-based, I feel like it's a lot easier for them to have, like, your choices come up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so in my backstory, I had, like, I basically tricked a queen into dueling me, and it kicked her ass. And so everyone in the first area was calling me Queenslayer, which is really easy when you're just find replace text rather than, okay, voice actor, we need you to read this 100 different ways in case they killed the queen, the king, or they didn't do any of those things. And it's just like, you know, but it makes it feel a lot cooler when it's like, oh my God, Queenslayer. I'm like, I'm part of this world. They like, they remember that I did this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool.
The other thing I particularly like is none of the companions you get are classes you can play as. They're all they all have their specific own abilities.
Oh, that's cool. Stuff.
It makes them a lot more interesting, I think.
Oh.
And it means you're not, oh gosh darn it, I was gonna be a tank, but now I have a tank who has the exact same abilities as me.
Yeah.
Only he's better. Or whatever, you
the
know?
The worst is when you, like, build a character and then you meet a companion. You're like, this is my favorite companion, like, personality-wise. Uh-huh. But they're your exact build. And
yeah, it's
like,
well, yeah, yeah.
I just can't bring them now.
Yeah, they gotta sit in the corner. I mean, there is still some of that. Like, if you built a tank, there is a tanky companion.
That's true, yeah. Mm-hmm. That is true.
Or, like, if you wanted to dual wield, there's a dual wielding companion. Or if you're a maniac and you built a healer as the main character in a CRPG.
Can you imagine that? Oh my gosh.
Who would do that? You don't even like these games.
I did that in the first Dragon Age. I just played a healer.
They always give you a healer.
Yeah, but yeah, like, I didn't use her.
God. Jesus fucking Christ.
I did healing and support buffs, and I let my AI kill
That's what
everything.
You do.
It was cool.
Why?
People.
They give you healers, guys.
It was very fun.
You're ridiculous.
Tyranny, if I remember correctly, is also like relatively short compared to other CRPGs, right?
It is. It's one of the main reasons I picked up. I think it's 20 hours versus Rogue Trader is like 60.
That's selling it short.
It's probably longer. What? I have the DLC installed as well, so it's probably even longer.
There's probably 60 hours of just reading about proper nouns.
Yeah, that is almost certainly true. The other thing I wanted to mention about Tyranny, last thing, is the magic system. I actually think the magic system is really cool. If you're going to play this game, you should play a little bit of wizard. You can multi-class really easily, but you should do at least a little bit of magic. What'd you say?
Like a healing wizard.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could do a healing wizard. What's cool about it is rather than being like, okay, here is the healing spell, here is the fire spell, you get like... It has like a magic crafting system. So you have magical elements, you have magical shapes, and then you have like bonuses you can put on that. So you can have like a fire cone, or you can have a healing cone, or a ranged ice spell. And so you can basically like mix and match your type of magic with your shape of magic to make your own custom spells. And then you can add like certain effects to it. Like, oh, I want to just boost the damage of this one. So I'll add like a strengthening accent. Just makes it hit a little bit harder. Or there's one where when I do ice damage, it also does a fire effect. That's really, really cool. And you can basically, the more effects you add to it, the higher your magic skill needs to be to cast it. So if you're just really, really good at magic, you can add like a bunch of different effects to your spell. It's really cool. I really liked it. It took me a long time to figure out how the fuck it worked, which was not great. Literally, I messaged Caleb because I had picked up a bunch of different spell shapes and spell accents, but I didn't realize I had to like use them from my inventory. They were just like pieces of paper that I like had in my inventory, but I had to like right click on them and use them to actually add them to my like repertoire of shit, which is weird. Just like, just when I pick it up, just put it in. Just put it in, whatever. I can't assign it without the right skills anyway, so like, why are you wasting my goddamn time?
But what if you want to sell it, Jake? Gosh,
why would I want to sell it? What? Whatever. It's a really fun game. I am very much looking forward to playing more of it.
I'm curious how the graphics hold up, because this is an old game. I want to say it was like 2016 or something around there.
I mean, it doesn't look good, but it's a CRPG. I'm not really playing it to be a looker. You know, I don't think I've ever played a CRPG and been like, I mean, I guess Disco Elysium looks stunning, but that's because a style thing, not a graphical fidelity thing.
To be fair, I don't think Tyranny's style is particular.
No, it is very fine. It's okay. Yeah. Not stunning, but it gets the job done.
Nice. Man, I'm really glad you're enjoying it, because I love that game.
Yeah, no, I am. I'm surprised, because at first I was like, I don't know if this is going to work, but you know what really helped? Figuring out that I could cast different types of spells. When all of my casters had to run into melee to cast their spells, I was like, this kind of sucks. This is kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But you know.
Ben?
Mostly I've just been playing Split Fiction. The only other thing is I played a little bit for the first time of this brand new game called Tiny Tina's Wonderland. it's an older one I've been wanting to play for a while. Jake and I played a bit of it.
Kevin.
Wow. Okay. He made it. He made the cut.
He gets in. He gets in.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
It's fun. I mean, it was like if you took a Borderlands game, made it fantasy themed, and kind of threw a lot of D&D elements into it, and it was pretty good. I like it. I like Borderlands games, and they made it D&D themed. Like, I'm playing a ice melee character, basically. I have guns, but why would I want to use those when I could run into combat, hit people with my sword a bit, and then die? It's great. It's so much better.
He does die a lot. As you guys laugh, it's pretty constant.
We did just hit the level where I started putting points into my defensive skill, so hopefully that helps.
We'll see. You guys playing on like a high difficulty or
no?
Oh, listen.
Okay.
This is what happens when he doesn't play a healer.
It's mostly that my build should not be doing melee until higher level, but I choose to anyways.
Mm.
What I should be doing is just sitting back and shooting people still for now, but. But it's fun.
I've been enjoying it. Yeah, I've also been enjoying it more than I thought I would. I feel like this game didn't get a very kind reception when it came out. Not sure why. It's very charming. Will Arnett is the voice of the main antagonist.
Hmm.
And Andy Samberg is the voice of one of the side characters, as is Wanda Sykes.
Oh, yeah.
Just great acting there. I will say thing I've noticed, I think the build crafting in this is a little less fleshed out than in other Borderlands titles.
You think?
I do, yeah. I would say that your class, the tree you get is equivalent to one of the character's trees from an older Borderlands game.
I think they make up for it by the fact that once we hit a high enough level, you multi-class into a second class.
I mean, yeah, maybe that'll make a difference.
But I get what it definitely feels like there's less options at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
I remember getting to a point where I was like, yeah, now I feel like my character's build's online. And then we rolled credits in that game.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That is an unfortunate feeling.
Yeah. It seems like they want you to do like end game grind in that game at some point. And I'm like, no, that's good. I'm good on that.
That's in every game now.
Hmm. Too much. Chad, what have you been playing?
Oh boy. I have been playing quite a bit of Call of Duty, actually.
Oh boy.
Call of Duty, actually. Is that the new one?
Yeah. So, you know.
Did you finish the campaign?
Haven't yet. I need to go and play it.
You even said that they fixed your problem. You texted me.
They haven't fixed the problem. I think the problem's fixed. Oh. I've actually gone to their, what is it? Is it Trello board? I think it's Trello boards. I've gone to the Trello board, and it still is sitting there saying investigating. So I don't think they fixed it yet. I think just building a new computer, basically, has fixed it.
Heck yeah.
Anyways.
So really, they didn't make a mistake. Your computer's just shit, and it caused problems.
No, I
got it.
I think the whole reason he built a new PC was just so he could play the Call of Duty campaign, right?
That makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Didn't you try it?
Can't play it.
Didn't you try it on multiple computers when you were trying to figure it out originally?
Yes, I did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the problem was. It was the most bizarre problem. I probably actually will go log into the campaign now after, you know, what has it been, like 2 weeks since I've texted you, and bet you the save won't be there. Because that's just how this game's working. So I don't know. I'm scarred. I'm like, I keep thinking about it. And I'm like, ugh, I don't want to have to play through it again.
Provoxy.
Anyways, I've been playing a little bit of the zombies to like level up some guns for Warzone. And honestly, zombies mode's pretty cool in this game. You know, I like the directed mode because it kind of walks you through how to do the Easter egg. Kind of has like more of a goal in mind instead of it just being round-based zombies and zombies constantly. But then also the round-based zombies is really cool because, you know, you get to pack punch some guns three times. I mean, it's just the classic, you know, just constant training of the and kiting of the zombies. So it's a lot of fun. So like I said, leveled up a couple guns there. What's up?
Does the directed mode like tell you exactly what you have to do, or does it give you kind of like a guided direction?
So for instance, it's like you need to shoot panels with an electric gun.
Okay.
So you have to figure out, okay, I need to buy I think it's called like Deadwire from like a workbench. Mm-hmm. And then I need to find the panels that are around the marked location.
Okay.
And so like That's nice. Actually when I was doing it and I was doing it specifically so I could like get to a section of the Easter egg and then like glitch it to where I could actually like have God mode on and level weapons faster. I looked it up real quick and I was like, oh, there's like five or six panels that like are scattered throughout this area that you have to shoot. And if you're paying attention, once you shoot the first one, you kind of see where the spark travels to.
Mm.
So it's, yeah, but I mean, it pretty much directs you on like what to do. There are also steps like you have to type in a code to get this guy out of a tank. And you have to run around the map to like three different locations. And you have to like look at the walls and stuff like that. And like it kind of just points you in the direction of this is what the Easter egg is, but you're still going to figure it out.
Nice. Okay.
Or you could walk up to the guy at the very top who's sitting behind the desk and you can pay him like 5,000 money and he could just give you the code. So
okay.
You could bypass it that way too. So
that's cool.
It's really cool because there's like, I think, four or five different maps already in this game. All have directed mode, so you can go through each Easter egg and kind of just experience it. And then you can also take that knowledge after you play the directed mode into round-based zombies and do the Easter egg there so that you can get like the wonder guns and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. It's also really cool. Directed mode, once you get to a certain wave, until you finish that step in the puzzle, it will not progress that wave anymore. So if you get to wave like 5 and that's where the step is, you will repeat wave 5 over and over again until you get to the next step. So you can actually get like pack-a-punch weapons and
that's cool.
Armor and all sorts of stuff before you progress even further into the directed mode.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I really, really like that for leveling up one of the guns, which was the sniper, because basically I got to like wave 11 and then was able to just stand on a one spot where all the zombies would come up the one location. I was just able to snipe constantly and it never progressed past 11. So it was all one shot the entire time. And I was able to level up that gun pretty easily. Been playing with the father and his buddies there though. In Warzone, been playing the boot camp mode, which, predominantly AI. Every once in a while, there's a team there. You can kind of tell the AI from the team. Tried Rebirth a couple times myself and also tried Battle Royale myself.
Nope.
There's just sweats, man. They're too sweaty right now.
Sweats and hackers, dude. That's all that's in there. There's no reason to go.
I'm curious to see what they do when they release Verdansk here. And I think it's like April 14th or something like that's coming out. So I'm hoping that one, the player. I'm hoping that the player base increases because I feel kind of bad for, the guys playing over there because all they're doing is boot camp and they've tried Battle Royale a couple of times and they're very frustrated at how fast they die in there. And I'm like thinking back to like Warzone's prime and it's like I knew people that were even below their skill level that had fun in Warzone. And it's because of how many players there were. The skill-based matchmaking kind of protected them. But like it's basically just everybody my caliber or above that they're versing, regardless of any time that they're playing in Battle Royale. So I was like, just stay in boot camp until Verdansk comes out. Hopefully there's going to be a player base.
Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's... I actually saw a YouTube video the other day. I clicked on it. Apparently there is a LinkedIn job posting for Cheat Engine lead that... apparently if you actually look back in the Wayback Machine and stuff like that, they've just never had a Cheat Engine lead or anybody who's worked like
Ricochet?
Apparently Ricochet is an AI developed cheat engine that they basically put all their eggs in that basket, and it was just the AI kind of looked at how a human played. And then it looked at how cheats play and it kind of just like banned whatever they thought cheats were. And so that's why like you could mass report somebody and then they would get shadow banned like immediately because it was just the AI being like, oh yeah, okay, that guy got reported a lot. So he must be, you know, cheating. And apparently because of how much of a failure this has been, there is the conspiracy theory that it has been off for the past 5 years. It has just not been a thing.
I'm going to remind you that Call of Duty is the 11th highest grossing franchise of all time. And they did that with their anti-cheat? Yeah. No.
Also, Ricochet is like Colonel level.
I don't think it actually is, though.
That was like a big to-do when they're putting it out. They're like, yeah. Oh, they're doing the Colonel level anti-cheat that other games are doing. So Vanguard or whatever for League of Legends.
Yeah, I was about to say, apparently, if you look at Riot Games and you look at, Valorant, that is, kernel level. If I click the tray icon when I have that, on my computer, that anti-cheat is, in that tray. And I have to quit out of it to get it, off of my computer. And then to play Valorant, I have to restart my computer so that it comes back.
Yeah.
Ricochet.
It
is
warns
not
you
like
when
that.
You try to close it that you have to reboot your computer to get it back.
Yeah, Ricochet, totally not like that. It is not like that at all. So I don't know what Ricochet was. I don't believe it was kernel level. And I think honestly, Call of Duty needs to go the kernel level route because it's a fun game. And honestly, Warzone and stuff is cool. But when you have people 360 or constantly 360ing, sniping across the map every direction, and you're getting killed by people through walls, it's not a fun experience.
No. Nope.
Although I will say boot camp, not a lot of cheaters.
Hey.
It's a lot of AI, so you can tell that they're all bots. But then every once in a while you fight that team and you're like, hey, that was a good fight. And they're not a cheater.
Man.
Anyways.
Meanwhile, that team's like, I bet they were cheating.
Yeah. I've been yelled at so many times in boot camp. That I'm cheating and I need to stop. Gosh.
Man, you need to let me know when you're playing with your dad. I will go play some boot camp with you.
I will. I'll let you know.
All right.
Second game that I tried out. R period, E period, P period, O period.
Heck yes. So proud
this
of you
game
right
is a Lethal Company like. It's actually really creative though. You pretty much get dropped into a building, a little car that you're in gets crashed into it. It's like a little animation that happens. It's pretty cute. And then you're a bunch of just weird, slinky bot things. Like when you you crouch, you get your torso just disappears into your own body. It's also when you're talking, the head moves. You can see it flaps open. So the prox chat works that way where you're flapping open constantly. There's monsters all throughout, the little house that you're going through, and you're finding random things like lamps or hourglasses or gems, all breakable. So if you grab it and then turn around really fast and your friend's there, gem just explodes and you don't no longer get that for money that you can extract with. You get a cart that you can bring around and you can put everything in, and then you can take the cart back to the extraction. What's really cool about this game is it progresses from one extraction in the first level to two extractions, three extractions. And if you die in those levels that have multi-extractions, if your friend finds your body, he could put you in the cart, put you in the extractor, and you revive with 20 health. So that you're not out for the entire duration and you don't have to forfeit the run. You can revive your friends and stuff like that. So it's a really fun time. Really cool. There's different things you could buy, stun grenades or traps that can actually kill the monsters. So it's not always running away from them. But for the most part, the monsters are super dangerous, and it is a runaway, hide under stuff. It's also really cool because when you're not expecting to be found underneath a bench or a bed or something, and the monster finds you and kills you, gives you that little jump scare, kind of nuts. But yeah, it's a fun time. I think it's something that it's six players natively. Obviously, it has the Thunderstorm and the mods. So it is something that I feel like we should all definitely pick up for the extra live stream.
Cool, for sure. I'm
on board.
Last but not least, Alex.
Hey, Ben talked about it last podcast, but I wanted to call out Doomfields again. It is that mobile auto battler that he talked about last time. He recommended it. I picked it up like the next day, and I've been playing it a whole bunch, and I think it's just like the perfect mobile game.
It's great.
It's, yeah, like you play it with one finger. There's no dexterity required. Like, it's all menuing and making choices. It still has deep progression and choices, like a full roguelike on like a regular console or PC. Very limited ads for mobile.
I mean, like, extra guys don't spawn in. Limited ads.
It's like
maybe one ad every like 20 minutes of play or something like that.
Yeah, it's very unintrusive. Lets you play, pick up and play whenever, put it down whenever. Super, super fun. Like class progression and stuff, and just working up the roguelike tree and that. I think it's a good time. And then the other one that I've been putting some time into is Halls of Torment, which I don't know if anybody's ever talked about this on here before, but it's one of those Vampire Survivors likes.
Can we please change that name? That's so bad.
I don't know.
Vampire Survivors like.
We go through this every time.
It's not actually what they're called anymore.
Bullet Heaven. That's fine.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Whatever. Bullet Heaven. Halls of Torment. It's
Blevin.
Blevin.
There it is. That's gotta be it, right?
Like Ninja the streamer?
This one is themed like Diablo 2, basically. That style of graphics, 4x3 play area, that kind of thing. And they introduce a couple of cool new mechanics to the genre, which I think are interesting. So, like, you hit a boss at some point during your run, and he'll drop a chest that has a piece of gear in it. And you have like a loadout, like Diablo style, with like chest and boots and rings and all sorts of stuff like that. And the piece of gear you get, first of all, you don't just get whatever's given to you. You get a choice of three things, because you always get like a choice of three things in this game every time they give you something. And then you unlock the ability to go to a spot in the map and drop your piece of gear that you found in it. And then this guy back at the base will sell it to you later, and you can make permanent gear builds for different classes.
That's cool.
Using that mechanic in that loop of gameplay. So like at this point I've got like a dozen or so items that I can shuffle between to make different builds for different classes. And the other cool thing about this game is that there's like a quote unquote main quest line. So like every time you go in, they give you like an objective that's like, the first one's like, on the basic warrior dude, get strength 5. And you're like, all right, that's what I'm going to go towards in this run. And you do that. And then like the next objective will be like, you got this new talisman, use it to find the herbs in the next level. And then you do that, and then they progress, and they just like give you just like a little thing to go after for each run that I think helps keep you in the loop of wanting to do more runs, just to, because like Vampire Survivors are a game like that where like you finish a run and you beat the end boss. I feel like after you're done with that, you're just like, all right, I guess I'll just like keep on doing that to progress the meta progression of like making my dude more powerful. But after you beat it, it's like, is there a point to go back in? I don't know. And this one, there is a point, because you're trying to get through the quote unquote story. So like over time, you're like rescuing people from the dungeons and like getting new mechanics unlocked and new quests appear. And I just think it's a pretty well done implementation with like a couple of layers added on top.
Kind of sounds Hades in that regard, where you get bits of story as you go.
Yeah, I guess like way less so than Hades, but like, yeah, similar deal.
Cool. Boys, I think that's it.
Wrong one.
Well, again, when you spend 20 minutes fixing audio and, you know, then 40 minutes being angry about how poorly constructed a list is.
So bad.
It was really total bad podcast. Yeah.
Now, let's go back to that list.
Do we want to read back? We want to draft F. Bad list.
For sure. We should. Let me hold on. Let's just look at it one more time.
I would have continued talking about it.
Here it is. Just to remind you, this is Games Radar's top 25 soundtracks of all time. This is their top 10. Final Fantasy VII at number 10. Journey, Transistor, Bioshock Infinite, Kingdom Hearts, Deadly Premonition, Fallout New Vegas, Persona 5. Okay, sure. Undertale, Silent Hill 2. Guys, I think. You think this is a D?
I do. I'm curious. What is everyone here's number one video game soundtrack?
Number one's tough, man.
Probably
Hollow Knight.
Hollow Knight's a really good pick.
It's rated on the soundtrack that I go back to and I listen to regularly. It's Bastion.
It's not Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning.
It's not.
Unbelievable.
Maybe Nier Automata.
I don't know what my number one would be.
Me either.
It's tough.
I will say in recent history, Final Fantasy 16, just because of how just seamless the highs were into the lows. Like, you literally get into a fight and it just goes, like, it's a soundtrack. It doesn't even feel like it changes. Mm-hmm. But, like, it just goes into that, like, climax. And it's just like, oh, man. And then, like, the fight is over and it, like, returns to the low. And it's like, oh, man, it's just so good.
Yeah, I think for me, it's Fallout New Vegas for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I got them spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle. So it's
the thing is,
hey, you remembered a different one.
When we introduced the list, my first instinct was to say Skyrim. I don't know why.
It's got a good soundtrack, mate. Here's the thing: you play the Skyrim soundtrack, and I think everyone goes, "Oh, that's Skyrim."
Yeah,
oh my God.
Right.
Of course,
right.
I know it.
Just because we're not going to do soundtracks next time, I want to read you another real quick list that I found.
Yay!
This is Rolling Stone's top 25 best video game soundtracks of all time.
Why is it always 25?
I don't know, but I don't care about the top. All I care about is the top 10. All right, 10. Burnout 3 Takedown.
Huh. All right.
Interesting.
All right. All right.
I don't have any concept.
Gran Turismo 2.
Okay, so these are just like racing cars. These are just actual songs.
Wait.
A game.
Number 8, Brutal Legend.
The Jack Black game.
Yes, the Jack Black game.
The music was good.
Number 7,
the only good part of that game.
Man.
Grand Theft Auto 5.
Okay.
They like driving. They like cars.
They just have in-game radio stuff. That doesn't count.
Yeah. Number 6, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, again, though, it just has licensed music.
Yeah, that's just licensed music again.
Number 5.
Does that one have Tony Hawk Pro Skater?
I don't know. We'll see. Number 5, Hotline Miami.
Oh, I mean, that's a good
one.
That's
a good choice.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I was going to guess it, but I was like, it's licensed music again.
Number 4, not to be outdone, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. Definitely better.
GTA 5.
Ridiculous. Okay.
Number 3, Life is Strange.
Wow.
Life is Strange has a great soundtrack, but it is also licensed.
It is licensed. Okay, that's what I was going to ask, because I don't remember.
Number 2, 1999's Tony Hawk Pro Skater. There it is.
There you go.
Let's go.
We got
excellent pick.
They just like regular popular music.
Yeah, Rolling Stones.
Yeah, that's right.
And
that makes
number
sense,
one,
I guess.
Of course, everybody knew this is going to be number one. Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Three Grand Theft Auto games in the top 10.
So, for what it's worth, I could have picked a worst list. All right.
You could have picked a list that was all
and
licensed
that one
music.
Would be a
bad list. Yeah, for sure.
All right.
This one's got a couple good ones on it.
All right. So you guys are still confident with the D then. Got it.
Yeah.
That puts it in perspective, I guess.
Yeah, right. This list at least feels like it tried. You know what I mean? That list is just like, I don't know, put all the Grand Theft Autos on.
I wasn't
popular.
Yeah. That other list moved me from being like, this thing's barely a D, to like, this is solidly a D.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. I cannot wait for the next list I get for you guys then. All right.
Gosh.
Tune back in for the next time. We're going to play some more games, more V-Gig. Anyway, we'll catch you in 2 weeks. See you next time.
This week's podcast was edited by me, Aaron Juno.
Other voices this week include Alex McCausland, Chad McCausland, Caleb Juno, Ben Diaz, and Jake John Federkyle.
This week's music was again brought to you by Amer. You can check out his music on Spotify, or you can also check it out on soundcloud.com/Amer. Additionally, you can check out everything that we do, We Are the Horizon, at our website, www.wearethehorizon.com. We have a lot of video posts as well as links to other content we've done in the past.
You can also check out our new series, The Discordant Signal, a multi-arc Starfinder adventure, live on Twitch every Monday at 8 p.m., and then out on YouTube and whatever podcasting app you are using at 6 p.m. on Thursdays.
Again, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.